If you brought your Bible, why don't you turn with me to Matthew chapter 24. This morning we sort of laid a foundation as we talked a little bit about what we can expect in the Middle East according to Ezekiel chapter 38 and 39. And those nations that will be involved. Now, one of the things you have to remember is really all the nations in the world will be involved in one shape or form, as the Bible even talks about how all nations will be somehow involved with Jerusalem in the end of times. The book of Revelation brings China into the mix with a huge army from the east coming in. That's a part of Bible prophecy. And there's a lot to be said about many of the nations in the world. One of the interesting things is the nation, the United States, is somewhat silent in Bible prophecy. We don't hear a lot about the United States. Some would say none. But there might be some interesting things. I don't have time to go into some of those things tonight about the United States in Bible prophecy. But why would one of the major powers of the world, if not the major power of the world, not be mentioned in Bible prophecy? Well, one of the reasons I believe that's very possible is, one, when the rapture of the church takes place, 1 Thessalonians chapter 4, where it says, we which are alive and remain will be caught up and be with him, the rapture of the church will affect the United States more than any other nation in the world. As the United States, a fairly young nation, a nation that was founded on godly principles, believing in the Bible, there's still enough in this country of what I would say true Christians who are followers of Jesus. If the rapture of the church happens, that will cripple this country and make us probably not quite the world power that we are now. That's one possibility. There's a more bleak possibility, and that is that our morality is on such a downward spiral that the Lord will judge this nation as he did Sodom and Gomorrah before all this stuff comes down and we get attacked or wiped out by other nations of the world. That's a possibility. God forbid we pray against that and hope that our nation doesn't continue in that downward spiral, but that is a possibility why we might not be mentioned in future events. But all that's to say, in Matthew chapter 24, there are three main groups that are talked about, and I'd like to take a look tonight at those groups and continue our discussion about world events and why I believe it's possible that the Lord could come back in this coming year, or tomorrow, or even tonight. That'd be great. Tonight would be perfect. Anytime, it'd be great to have the Lord's return. But we are to live with that expectation. Why should we hope and maybe even be convinced that it's possible that the Lord come back in 07? Well, as I read Matthew 24, we see some of those signs unfolding, and Jesus will speak to three main groups. The end times as it relates to all the nations. Number two, the end times as it relates to Israel. And then number three, the end times as it relates to the church. And we see those three groups addressed here in Matthew chapter 24. We start in verse 3, Matthew 24, 3. It says there, and as he sat upon the Mount of Olives, the disciples came unto Jesus privately, saying, tell us, when shall these things be? And what shall be the sign of thy coming and of the end of the world? And Jesus answered and said unto them, take heed that no man deceive you. Would you mark deceive there? That's important, especially as it relates to our discussion tonight. We'll get back to that. Verse 5, for many shall come in my name, saying, I am Christ, and shall deceive many. And you shall hear of wars and rumors of wars. See that ye be not troubled, for all these things must come to pass, but the end is not yet. For nation shall rise against nation, and kingdom against kingdom. There shall be famines, pestilences, and earthquakes in diverse places. All these are the beginning of sorrows. Now, the Greek word for sorrow there is the Greek word odin, which is a word that's not unfamiliar through Bible prophecy. Whenever the Bible talks about the end of times, it uses that word odin, which that Greek word literally means pain that comes during childbirth, birth pains. Now, you ladies who have delivered children, you know how that happens. They come intermittently. birth pains. And the closer you get to the time of the delivery, the labor pains become more intense and more frequent. That is the description we see in Isaiah, Jeremiah, Ezekiel, the book of Revelation, 1 Thessalonians. We see all throughout Bible prophecy this comparison to the end of time being birth pains. So what does that mean? It just means that all the events that we tend to see are birth pains. Could it be that the war in Iraq is one of the birth pains? Could it be the tsunami that killed so many? Could that be a giant birth pain that the earth saw as there was a huge earthquake out in the ocean causing massive destruction? Birth pains. And we've seen all kinds. We could talk all night about birth pains, but these wars and rumors of wars, earthquakes and what have you. And it says all of these are the beginnings of sorrows or birth pains. Verse 9, then shall they deliver you up to be afflicted and shall kill you, and you shall be hated of all nations for my name's sake. And then shall many be offended and shall betray one another and shall hate one another. And many false prophets shall rise and shall deceive many. And because iniquity shall abound, the love of many shall wax cold. But he that shall endure unto the end, the same shall be saved. And this gospel of the kingdom shall be preached in all the world for a witness unto all nations, and then shall the end come. So what we are to look for, according to this first section, which I'm calling the end times as it relates to the nations of the world, that's the first point of tonight's thing, the end times as it relates to the nations of the world. We see we're watching for wars and rumors of wars. We're watching for famines. We're watching, according to Jesus' warning, for cataclysmic events, including earthquakes and what have you. As Christians, we're watching for the persecution of believers, which we're seeing all around the world. We don't see it in America. If you feel like people are making fun of you at work, that's not persecution. I've been suffering for the Savior. Someone called me a Jesus freak the other day. No, I've heard that from time. That's not persecution. Just go to Sudan. You'll see what persecution is. By the way, one of the things that I mentioned at one of the services this morning, I forget which one, but I was talking about how there in Afghanistan, there were only 17 people in 2001 that they found during their study of Christians living in Afghanistan, 17. And I mentioned that's just like row number five there, 17 people. Now, if you do a poll in Afghanistan, there's more than 10,000 Christians who have been saved in the last several years. In Sudan, Christians are being saved, and nobody's saving them like Islam with a sword to their neck or a gun to their head. No, they have a gun to their head if they become a Christian, if they become believers, and yet they're piling into churches. In Sudan, they're trying to find pastors who will teach other pastors because there's so many people, they don't know what to do with them. And they're living in the midst of massive persecution. There's places in the world where persecution is on the rise. Now, it's possible that that'll start to happen in America. Have you ever kind of mentally worked through that one? We've been so safe and secure for so long in our walk, in our faith. But I wonder if those times are changing. I do think as we get closer to the coming of the Lord that persecution, even in America, might begin to surface. That's something to watch. We're watching persecution of believers. We're watching for the spread of the gospel. We're watching for the rise of false prophets and messiahs and different religions. We're watching, according to the rest of this chapter, that we're going to see the rebirth of the nation of Israel. We're watching for Jews returning back from centuries of exile. And Jesus said, when you see all these things happening, that's what we're going to see in this chapter. When you see these things happening, know that the end is near. Now, there's a few things that we need to recognize here in Matthew 24. Look at verse 11. It says, and many false prophets shall rise and deceive many. Now, this is where we are in current situations around the world, particularly with the religion of Islam. In 1 John chapter 2, verse 18, you can jot this down in your notes if you wish. Children, It is the last hour, and just as you have heard that the Antichrist is coming, even now many Antichrists have arisen. From this we know that it is the last hour. When people start pointing to false Christs, looking to false Christs, that's when John from 1 John says that the end is near. That's when Jesus said here in Matthew 24 that the end is near. When people start pointing to these false prophets or even false Christs, as it is there in verse 5 where it says, "For many shall come in my name saying, I am Christ, and shall deceive many." Now, I'm not talking about guys like the guy that I met at my church when I was an associate pastor in Southern Oregon. There was one Sunday I was there, and there was a guy who showed up who was acting just a little strange. And so, as one of the pastors, people said, "Brett, you know, you gotta watch this guy. He's acting a little weird." Now, he was wearing this kind of light blue polyester suit with a big old collar. And he had kind of scruffy hair and a big mustache, and I couldn't really tell what he was doing, but he'd shake every now and then he would sort of walk around and hold his hand up to people like this, and I was, okay, what's the deal? So I just thought, I'm gonna go up and talk to him. So I went up and said, "Hey, how you doing? My name is Brett. What's your name?" And he just was silent and looked at me. And then I said, "So, man, you know, what are you doing here?" He says, "I've come to be with my people." Wow, yeah, you know, they're my people too, man. I love these guys. This is a neat church. Praise the Lord, right? Yeah. And this guy's, yes. And so then I said, "So," I was thinking, "Man, I got to get into this guy's head and figure out what he believes, what he's doing here." I said, "Do you believe in Jesus Christ?" And he said, "I that speaketh unto thee am he." Hello. So there was a little red flag that went up in my head at that point. I realized, something's wrong here. The guy was claiming to be Jesus, the Messiah. Now, obviously, he had zero followers, fortunately. And the poor guy was just a little bit, you know, off. His mental capacities were, something was wrong there, and my heart broke for the guy. Those aren't the kind of false prophets or false messiahs that we're talking about here. I'm talking about ones where actually people do follow. And we see that in different religions and different cults and what have you, whether it's the Mormons who have been distracted from the truth by Joseph Smith, or perhaps Moroni, that angel that gave them their gold, their tablets and the glasses that Joseph Smith wore. Those kinds of false prophets that would come, and they're just one example of many that have come and surfaced in the world. False religions and what have you. Buddha, Krishna, and others. But the indication that the Bible gives us is that there would be those who would call themselves false Christ. But one of the marks, as you read the book of Revelation and the book of Daniel, there would be one particular who would be an extreme example of this being a false Christ, the false Messiah. He's called in the Bible the Antichrist. Now that comes into play even here in Matthew 24 in those that would deceive many, these false Christs, and those that would try to deceive the world into thinking they are the Messiah. Now, here's the thing that we need to understand. The things that we began to talk about this morning with Iran and Russia and the Muslim nations that would confederate together there in Ezekiel 38, one of the things you need to understand is they are looking to the Messiah that would come for them. This is something you need to understand as a Christian in 2007, as we begin this year. You need to understand why some of these things are taking place. We are facing, as I said this morning, one of the most perilous times, I think, in the world's history. You've got Iran, who's trying to get these nuclear weapons with Ahmadinejad. Remember, I'm in a jod. Ahmadinejad, he is a guy who's saying, "I would like to see Israel blown off the map," which means the Jews exterminated. This is an amazing thing to me. It's an amazing thing to me that the world, by and large, in Europe and other countries, how do they believe that the Jews have no right to the land to be occupiers of Israel? That just baffles me. What baffles me even more, last year we saw where in the Gaza Strip, tens of thousands of Jews were asked to leave their homes that they'd been in for a long, long time. These Jews in the Gaza region were asked to leave their homes for really one reason. When you really think about it, when you really put the pieces together, they were asked to leave because they were Jews. This new young state of the Palestinians that is surfacing, the world looked on as Israeli soldiers pulled the Jews out of their houses, out of Gaza, because they were Jews. Now, this is an amazing thing to me. Anywhere else, any other people group in the world, this would have been labeled for what it really is. You see, I believe it's called ethnic cleansing. Taking Jews, because they're Jews, out of their homes in Gaza, saying, you can't live here because the Palestinians live here. And sadly, those people, in tears flowing, man, it was a moving thing if you watch the news. This just happened last year. And more, they're trying to get the Jews to give up the West Bank and these places. And it's truly just ethnic cleansing. And that's what the religion Islam teaches, that the Jews, they either convert or die, and they would prefer the die part. And that's what we're going to look at. See, what we need to understand here is that the idea of a nuclear Iran is dangerous for the Jews, but I would suggest it's dangerous for America as well, for you and for me. You have to understand, Ahmadinejad, the world has been trying to stop them from enriching uranium. They're beginning that now. In fact, as the world, you know, and the UN said to Iran, hey, you guys need to not do this. And they said, no, we won't stop enriching uranium, but let's talk. And they kind of continue with their, what I call their old talk and build strategy. This is something you have to understand. They're just saying, oh yeah, let's talk about this, as they're in the background, ding, 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 working on their nuclear weapons. And they're getting them together. The longer we talk, the longer they can buy time, the sooner they can have weapons. And this talk and build strategy will work, because if we can just keep talking, Iran thinks, we'll get our nuclear weapons. And once we have nuclear weapons, end of discussion. We don't need to talk anymore because we have nuclear capabilities. The problem is the silly world, this politically correct world that we're living in, where it's getting extremely unreasonable, where we're just talking with these nations like North Korea and Iran. Man, even though it's a massive threat, and it is in the interest of the United States to consider what to do, Israel is the one country that cannot afford to let Iran have nuclear weapons, even more so than America. And so that's something to watch in 07. And for the past few years, we've been watching, what's Israel going to do? Because a nuclear Iran means huge trouble for Israel. And so this talk and build strategy is working so far. Now, imagine Ahmadinejad having his trigger finger on a thermonuclear warhead. The man who has repeatedly said that he wants to wipe Israel off the map. Now, by the way, the only good news I can think about that statement, Ahmadinejad saying, I want to wipe Israel off the map, that he's acknowledging that Israel is on the map. I'm happy for that part of it, because no Islamic nation wants to admit Israel even has a place on the map. Do you understand that? The Muslims don't recognize Israel. When you look at the elementary school books in Muslim countries and you see maps of the Middle East, you will not see Israel on the map. They make it an Arab nation and they call Israel the occupiers. And sadly, the world buys this occupier line, hook, line, and sinker. We've talked about that in previous times. Now, you might say, okay, Brett, so why is the Iran nuclear crisis that's going on right now in the world, what does that mean to me? Why is that important for me? Well, this current crisis, as I mentioned this morning, it started in 1979, where the Ayatollah Khomeini overthrew the Shah of Iran. In 1979, the Islamic Revolution started. Of course, the hostage crisis, 52 hostages, 444 days during President Jimmy Carter's office of presidency. It was then that the Ayatollah called the United States the Great Satan. Now, Ahmadinejad, as I mentioned in one of the services this morning, he is seen in pictures during this Islamic Revolution. Ahmadinejad, who's now the president of Iran, he was seen in pictures during the hostage crisis as one of the people who interrogated these hostages. One of the people, in fact, the hostages, when Ahmadinejad became the president the hostages from the 80s, or, you know, the 79, 1980 hostage crisis, they said that guy was one of our interrogators. These are the hostages. Now, Tehran is denying it, saying, oh, Ahmadinejad wasn't one of those guys. No way. But I think I'll choose to believe the 50-plus hostages that were interrogated. Don't you think they would remember the guy that interrogated them in that tragic and terrible time during the hostage crisis? Not only that, the pictures don't lie. There's pictures surfacing on the internet of Ahmadinejad in those times during the Islamic Revolution of 79 and 80. Now, Ahmadinejad, he became president in Iran in August of 2005. Before that, he was the mayor of Tehran. Now, here's the just to kind of get you up to speed, what's going on in the world with Ahmadinejad. He is a central theme. Now, by the way, this thing of Iran and Ahmadinejad is one of many geopolitical situations in the world that we could talk about tonight. I'm choosing this one because there's a point that I think we need to understand. And so we could talk about Russia, we could talk about China, we could talk about North Korea, we could talk about Israel itself and the whole Palestinian Arab-Israeli conflict. But I've kind of chose to focus on this one tonight because there's something you need to know about Islam that I think Ahmadinejad is maybe one of the better examples of why we need to be concerned as Christians and pray. You see, Ahmadinejad, after he became president in 2005, in August, September came around, and he was invited to speak at the UN. Now, there's a few things that marked this speech, and if you remember, maybe you guys saw this on the news, several things marked this speech. Number one, he said that he felt the hand of God come and entrance all the leaders sitting there in the UN. He said, he claimed that the leaders didn't blink for 28 minutes. Now, the leaders that were there, when they heard that, they said, the reason we didn't blink is because we were just amazed at what this guy, the crazy things he was saying. But he said, no, the hand of God came and the people didn't blink. They were in a trance as I gave my speech. And his followers that were there, which they always have their posse, you know, there at the UN, his followers said that they saw a glow of light around him, and he said that he felt it too. And then also at the end of his speech, he closed with a prayer. Now here's where you gotta really tune in. He closed with a prayer, and his prayer was that Allah would send the Mahdi to bring peace and justice to all the earth. His prayer was that Allah, which is their version of God, different God than our God, by the way, that the Mahdi would be sent by Allah. Now, keep that word Mahdi in mind. Angela Merkel, who's the Chancellor of Germany, she said that Ahmadinejad is the new Hitler. Now, Americans, we're saying, oh, how could people say that? No, Israel's the Hitler. George Bush is the Hitler. You're hearing people call everybody Hitler nowadays. That's kind of like the insult that they just toss around now. Oh, you're like Hitler. But the German Chancellor, don't you think she kind of knows? I mean, you know, don't you think no, you guys, listen up. We Germans kind of understand things. He is the Hitler. According to her, he is the new Hitler. That's interesting to me. Now, listen to this. Some of Ahmadinejad's quotes. CNN, December 2005, he said, I believe they have invented the myth that the Jews were massacred during the Holocaust. Now, he's been saying this whole thing over and over again, that the Holocaust never really happened. It's a fabrication of different nations. In fact, he said this to Germany in the Islamic Republic news agency, December 2005. If you, Germany, have burned the Jews, then why don't you give the Jews a piece of Europe, the United States, Canada, or Alaska to Israel? Our question is, if you have committed this huge crime, then why should the innocent nation of Palestine pay for this crime? Oh, man. This guy's got audacity. Here's the thing. Oh, man, I better not get into this. But, you know, Israel, the Jews have been in Palestine for a long, long time. Not just in 1948 when the League of Nations decided to give back to the Jews their land in Israel. We could go back all the way to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. But we've done studies on that, and I won't reluctantly pass that one up and not talk about that. So, he's saying the Jews have no right, so you Germans, if you're really guilty of the Holocaust, then why don't you give them some of your land or America or whatever? Another thing he said, CNN, Thursday, October 27th, 2005, anybody who recognizes Israel will burn in the fire of Islamic nation's fury. This is the leader of Iran. This is a guy who's going to have nuclear weapons. And in fact, some of the experts in the world would say that Iran really already probably has at least dirty bombs, nuclear weapons, but they probably even have large missiles, if not already. And so he's the one saying anybody who recognizes Israel will burn in Islamic nation fury. Then Al Jazeera, and then later on the Associated Press, quoted Ahmadinejad saying this: there is no doubt that the new wave in Palestine will soon wipe off this disgraceful blot from the face of the Islamic world, in reference to Israel. He called Israel, the Jews, a disgraceful blot. Now you say, well, Brett, why are you so into Israel? Well, if you're new here, you need to understand. I believe what the Bible teaches. Genesis tells us, God tells us, those who bless the nation Israel will be blessed. Those who curse the nations of Israel will be cursed. Historically, if you follow throughout the centuries, even the millennia, you will find the nations that blessed the Jews ended up being blessed, and the nations who cursed those nations will be cursed. There was a book called Eye to Eye. If you're interested, you should read that book. It's an excellent book that describes world history events, even to the present day, with George Bush and Tony Blair and different world leaders, that every time they nudged Israel to a Palestinian statehood or signed any accords or decrees, how many cataclysmic things happened in the world or in a person's personal life. How their lives were not so blessed after they messed with Israel. And it's an interesting book. That prophecy has proven to be true. The Lord will bless the nations or the people who bless Israel and will curse the nations who curse Israel. That's why I'm glad that America, up to this point, has somewhat stood by Israel. I think that's one of the reasons why we have this great nation. Because we're one of the few people that really do stand by Israel. And man, I'd say that's being tested even today. In April 2006, Ahmadinejad said, Palestine will soon be freed. Israel is headed for annihilation. This is the guy who's gathering up or enriching uranium for energy. The guy who needs energy, as we said this morning, like Iran needs more sand. These guys are not using nuclear power for energy. They're wanting to cause what I told you this morning. Ahmadinejad said, there's going to be a storm in a single hour. Israel's going to be annihilated. They're going to be wiped off the map. Even as he said here, Israel is headed for annihilation. Now, what he could do with nuclear weapons in 6 minutes, it took Hitler 6 years to do, to kill 6 million Jews. We have forgotten as a world by and large what nuclear weapons can do. It's an amazing thing. People say, well, United States have nuclear weapons. But, you know, honestly, and this might sound weird coming from an American, but aren't you glad that the United States is the one that possessed nuclear weapons first? Germany was this close to possessing nuclear weapons. What would the world look like today? What would the world look like today if the United States didn't drop the bomb on Hiroshima or Nagasaki? What if the Germans got it first? This would be a very different world. I saw one guy writing in on a blog somewhere saying, you know, well, Americans are hypocrites. They've possessed nuclear weapons. Why shouldn't Iran be able to possess nuclear weapons? And the reason I like to say is, buddy, you'd be speaking Japanese right now. You have to understand, we would be in huge trouble if it wasn't for that nuclear weapon. Now, we did use nuclear weapons, and we're one of the only nations who have, right? But here's the thing, we haven't used those weapons for many, many, many decades. And they've been a great deterrent to great suffering in the world. In the wrong hands, nuclear weapons could cause great trouble. I'm concerned about North Korea. He's a little bit wacko. And he's got nuclear weapons, and he says he can reach Portland, Oregon. Congratulations. Not only those guys, but there's some other, a little bit on the edge countries. Pakistan now has nuclear weapons. India has nuclear weapons. And the world is a little bit nervous about those two going at it with nukes. So now that the world is starting to have nuclear weapons, much of the world is saying, well, why shouldn't everybody have nuclear weapons? And I can give you a lot of good reasons. There are certain nations like Ahmadinejad in Iran that will absolutely use them for their political purposes. And they won't use them as the United States has, I would say, carefully used their nuclear weapons. I know that that might sound hypocritical coming from an American, but at the same time, you mark my words, if Iran possesses nuclear weapons, this is a president saying, yeah, we don't like the Jews, so we're going to wipe them off the map. That's a little different than the United States, who was in a brutal battle, hundreds of thousands of lives being lost in battle, who finally pulled the trigger or pushed the button, if you would, on the nuclear weapons during World War II. Very different case. Sadly, our young people in the world have forgotten. The memory of war is out of their mind. They don't know why we use nuclear weapons. They don't understand World War II. And so they're saying, well, why shouldn't Ahmadinejad be like the rest of the world? Now, the United States and Israel has made it clear that they will not allow a nuclear Iran. Bush and Olmert, who's the acting prime minister of Israel, met in April of 06, and they agreed that they have about 1 year to deal with this matter. 1 year from April of 06. That's what they came up with. So that's an interesting thing to watch. April of this year, and see what happens by that time, as both Bush and Olmert agreed that they have that amount of time. Why? Well, remember I talked this morning about Iran starting to install the Tor M1 system given to them or sold to them by the Russians. And if that gets into effect, then that's one of the reasons why April is an important date. They don't want them to get that. Now, you might say this, Brett, why is Iran acting out now? Why did Ahmadinejad choose now to act out? Well, I think there's a few reasons you need to be aware of. First of all, the Iraq War. The United States is being viewed by the world as failures in Iraq. They view us as being spread thin, that we've got our hands tied in Iraq. And we've done some prophecy updates talking about Iraq. If you want to pick up some of the old prophecy updates, we have talked about that region of the world and what it means. Even last year we talked about Babylon, ancient Babylon, and how it fits into the prophetic picture. But we've lost credibility. We've got our hands tied. At least Ahmadinejad and much of the world thinks that. And so they think, hey, this is the time we can start acting up. So Ahmadinejad is saying these igniting words, causing the world to wonder what in the world's going on. Another reason Ahmadinejad can say these things and sort of get away with it, one word, oil. I told you this morning that Iran is third or fourth top exporter of oil. They export more than 20% of the world's oil. That's important. Now, this year in 2006, we began using, we kind of broke a new mark in America's history. We began using 1,000 barrels of oil per second in America. Now, that's a lot of oil. I had a old 69 Land Cruiser that kind of went through that much oil. My friends called it the Exxon Valdez, because everywhere I parked, oil would just kind of flood. But it was nice. I never had to change the oil in it. You know, I just kind of every day put a whole new quart in and just kind of flushed it through. But we've used 1,000 barrels of oil per second. We drain an Olympic-sized swimming pool every 15 seconds. That's 5,500 Olympic-sized swimming pools of oil per day. So that's a lot of oil if you can get your mind around that. Iran, being the third or fourth leading export of oil in the world, if they were to take their 2.5 to 5 million barrels a day off the market supply, if they were to say, you know what, we're not going to sell you oil to the world. Now, keep in mind, America, we don't buy oil from Iran. So, hey, what's the problem? You have to understand supply and demand. If Iran takes their oil off the market, which they have threatened to do, 20% of the oil being taken off the market, that's going to drive oil prices up. In fact, listen to this. The Saudi Arabians said, the leader of Saudi Arabia said, if the United States or Israel hits Iran, that for some period of time, the price of oil will go from $70 a barrel to $210 a barrel. So you thought you were paying big bucks when we were over $3 a gallon for gas. That's going to be chump change. If Iran gets hit by Israel, by the United States, they're saying that I ran has a tool, a weapon to use, and that is oil. They will withhold oil. Not only that, but Iran controls a little area, a waterway in the Persian Gulf, the place called the Strait of Hormuz. Now, if you look at a map of the Persian Gulf, by the way, somebody this morning said, Brett, you need to start using PowerPoint, buddy. You know, get maps, you know, get charts and stuff. And you know, it's tempting because I am talking about a lot of things that maybe would be nice to have pictures, but my version of PowerPoint is this. So that's it. I'm sorry. So you got a picture in your mind's eye. When you get home, look on a map. But there in the Persian Gulf, in the Persian Gulf, you've got that the Strait of Hormuz, which is a little narrow strategic waterway linking the Persian Gulf with the Gulf of Oman. Now, this little waterway is narrow. It's controlled by Iran, and they have threatened to put mines in that waterway and or torpedo any super tankers that would go through there, plugging up the Strait of Hormuz. What would that do? It would stop much of the oil flow coming out of that region of the world. It would for a very large period of time, cause havoc in the world. See, Iran sees oil and their ability to provide oil and let people go through the Strait of Hormuz to be able to supply oil to the world. They use that as a threat against the world. That's an important part of this whole picture, prophetically. Now, that brings us to Ahmadinejad and what he thinks about this stuff. I told you that Ahmadinejad, he believes in this coming imam, the Mahdi. And one of the things we need to understand about this Ahmadinejad is that he, let me read you another quote. Ahmadinejad said on November 11th, 2005, he said, "We have to turn Iran into a modern and divine country to be the model for all nations, which will also serve as the basis for the return of the 12th Imam." The 12th Imam. Now, the 12th Imam is the Shiite name. The Al-Mahdi is the Sunni name. Remember, in Islam, there are different descriptions of this Mahdi, this coming leader, this coming Messiah. Now, one of the things I wanted to kind of give you a little bit of a quick Islam 101. We need to understand a little bit about Islam. Why is it important for you and I to understand Islam? Well, like I said this morning, Islam is the fastest growing religion in the world. The Muslims have had to, for centuries, take a back seat to Christianity. When you put the Protestants and the Catholics all together in the world, we are bigger than all of Islam. But for a long time now, Islam has been growing in a very rapid rate. And people who study the sociology of all this and the demographics, they believe that Islam will overtake Christianity as the number one religion by about 15 years from now, they're saying. That's an interesting thing. There's more Muslim mosques now in England than there are churches. Many nations in Europe, France is very concerned. Here's France, who's totally trying to be politically correct. They found last year themselves in big trouble with the Muslims. They don't know what to do with their Muslim population, and it's becoming a thorn in their side. They don't know what to do with it. In America, we're seeing Islam on the rise. We saw our first, was it a congressman who just recently got elected? He's a Quran reading, you know, Muhammad worshiping Muslim. And there's entire towns that have been turned over in the United States to Muslims, where they've built mosques in the middle of their towns. These are things you can study and look at yourself. But Islam is on the rise. Now, it's an amazing thing to me. Why would Islam be on the rise? Well, somehow people are intrigued. What is it? Well, in Muslim 101, Islamic religion 101, Muslims believe that God revealed his final message to humanity through Muhammad, their prophet. They believe he was visited by the angel Gabriel. They believe he was visited by the angel Gabriel. In 570 to July 6, 632, that's when Muhammad was on the scene. Remember, this is, 600 years after Christ came, after the Bible was given, after we have these words from Paul and Jesus and the Old Testament. I mean, you understand, Islam is new compared to Christianity. And so it's a reworking of a monotheistic religion. You have to understand that. Now, Muhammad considered to have been God's final prophet to seal the prophets. That is, whatever Muhammad said, whether it changes Christianity or not, he's the one who's got it right according to Islam. The Quran is believed to be the final flawless revelation of God to humanity. So they believe the Quran to be like we as Christians would believe the Bible, infallible, inerrant, valid until the day of the resurrection. Muslims believe that Muhammad received these Gabriel revelations from a cave near Mecca between the years 610 and his death in 632. Now, the various writings of the Muslims include not only the Quran, but also the Hadith and the Sunnah, which a lot of the things I'll be telling you about tonight, particularly concerning this 12th Imam or the Mahdi, come from the Hadith. And the Muslims claim that the Jews and the Christians forgot or distorted the Word of God after it was revealed unto them. Now, before we take a break, and I can't believe it's already almost 10, but what I need to tell you is Islam is a false religion. Muhammad is a false prophet. The reason I have to say that clearly is because there are young people today by the droves who are getting sucked into Islam. They like what they see to some levels. They like the fervor of the Muslim. The Muslim is the guy who prays toward Mecca on his knees. And when you see those thousands of people on their little rug praying, you think, wow, that's prayer. And we Christians, we kind of think, man, we don't pray like that. Or the Muslims, they seem to be passionate. They seem to be, well, as American Muslims, we see this peace-loving religion. But really, you have to understand, this is one of the false religions that Jesus talked about. Well, Brett, how do you know? How do you know that Allah and God are not the same? How do you know that Muhammad wasn't the prophet of God who came and kind of straightened out things and said, you know, the church got off course and they got all into different things, but they've forgotten the truth of submission. By the way, Islam means submission. Now that's why many Muslims around the world believe you either convert to Islam or you die by the edge of the sword. The old beheading concept. Now, here's the thing. What about submission? Well, they believe you submit to Islam. Now, how do we know that that's false, that Islam is false? Would you turn with me to Galatians quickly? And then after I'm done with this, we'll take a break and have some dessert. And then we'll get into the crux of the matter, the meat of what we need to talk about tonight. Galatians chapter 1. In Galatians chapter 1, we have, I believe, one of the great ammos against any false religion, especially these religions that claim to have been told by an angel that they've got the true scoop, the true story. Listen to what Paul says here in Galatians chapter 1, verse 6. There, Paul says in Galatians 1, 6, I marvel that you are so soon removed from him that called you into the gospel of Christ unto another gospel, which is not another, but there be some that trouble you and would pervert the gospel of Christ. But though we, Paul saying me and the boys, Silas, Barnabas, though we or an angel from heaven preach any other gospel unto you than that which we have preached unto you, let him be accursed. Verse 9, as we said before, so now I say again, if any man preach any other gospel unto you than that which you have received, let him be accursed. For do I now persuade men or God? Do I seek to please men? For if I yet pleased men, I should not be the servant of Christ. But I certify you, brethren, that the gospel which was preached of me is not after man, for I neither received it of man, neither was I taught it, but by the revelation of Jesus Christ. Paul the Apostle, one of the things I love about this book that we hold here is the Bible, when it was written, the canon of Scripture put together, the door was closed airtight. This book is all we need. The problem comes when these so-called prophets have these visions or hearings from these angels. What would Paul say about Gabriel coming and talking to Muhammad? He would say, let that angel be accursed. What, Brett, are you cursing Gabriel? Well, I would suggest that Satan, being a deceiver and a liar, was probably the angel that went and saw Muhammad. Do you remember, Satan, all he is a fallen angel. And he could come up and say, hey, I'm Gabriel. Hey, Muhammad, nice to meet you. Let me give you a new thing. We're going to call this the Quran. And we're going to have whole people all over the world follow this false religion. One of the things we see of Satan is he is a counterfeiter. It's one of his tactics. That's why Paul nailed it down. He says, if I come and tell you another gospel, I'm accursed. Or if an angel from heaven, that's why Joseph Smith's hearing from Moroni is an abomination. When you drive by Lake Oswego and see the big white pointy steeples of the Lake Oswego Mormon Tabernacle there, when you see the golden angel Moroni up on the top lit up, as you drive by, think in your mind, that's accursed. That angel is accursed. Well, but that's so mean. No, it's the Bible. And here's the Lord giving us his word saying, don't be duped. Don't be tricked. Many false prophets would come to deceive. To deceive many. I believe one of the greatest deceptions that's going on in the world today is the deception of Islam. And the coming of this 12th Imam. The coming of this false Messiah for Muslims. Now, I think what you're going to find out in our next session, this is profound. When you find out what the Muslims believe about this guy that Ahmadinejad is predicting. For Ahmadinejad claims to know who the 12th Imam, who the Al-Mahdi is. He claims to have a relationship with the Al-Mahdi, and he claims that he will come. Well, in 2005, Ahmadinejad said that the Al-Mahdi will surface in 2007. So kind of an interesting deal, especially when you realize what they think the Al-Mahdi is. And so we'll cover that in our next session.